So what does wellness mean to you?
Welcome to the Wellness Wednesdays podcast. I am your host, Eric Collard, where we talk about wellness with all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds. And the conversation sometimes gets a little crazy, but we try to keep it on track. This week, I have a special guest all the way from Calgary, Alberta. We've gone to Halifax and other places, but this time we're going almost the West Coast. Ernest Berberic, who's a digital marketing strategist and in kind of motion. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks so much for the introduction, Eric. It's nice to be on. I really like the topic. I think it's really important, especially today.
Yeah, and it's weird that we're talking about wellness to a digital marketer. Some people might not see the fit, but you came across my Twitter feed probably a couple years ago, and then we've had a couple chats since then, and some of the stuff that you talk about is really intriguing me. And, we can talk about the digital marketing side, which is what I do a little bit as well in my 9-to-5-ish. But the stuff I really want to talk to you about is some of the recent blog posts that you've talked about workplace wellness, if you can put it that way, about anxiety, about stress. And I think it's one of the things that is not talked about enough in the business sphere. Like a lot of everything's about, how to hack your growth and how to market. But a lot of times, like being in a small business, especially if you don't take care of yourself, it's very hard to pour from an empty cup, right? It's one of those things that I think your message really resonated with me, partly because it's real, and I just wanted to have you on.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me. So I'm an entrepreneur as well. I've had my business for 8.5 years now, and you do run into a lot of these types of things that aren't often talked about openly in entrepreneurial and business circles. And I think it's something that a lot of people experience and kind of suffer in silence. And as much as cliche as that is, it is a reality, especially in the professional and entrepreneurial circles, specifically when we're talking about anxiety, stress, depression, and some of those types of things.
Yeah, it's tough. And I've dealt with some of it myself. I've blogged about it because I find it's kind of a nice way to get it out. But it's one of those things, it's a catch-22 as a small business owner, because most of the time people hire you because they like you. But if you're, showing that you're vulnerable, especially in the marketing sphere then do I want to hire someone that's talked about anxiety and stress and depression?
Yeah.
Like how does that work? So, well, give me a bit of your background and why are you talking about this?
Why am I coming out about stress and anxiety? So a bit of my background. Well, my background's a little bit all over the place, so I'll give you a bit of a short version. So I started my business about 8 years ago after getting canned from a company. And so at that point in time, I was basically a salesman for digital products on this one radio network. And a lot of times I found that it wasn't quite a good moral fit for me, because I found that a lot of times for some of the clients that would go in and sell stuff to, our position was to sell them stuff and their position was to win business. And I would kind of be stuck in this awkward middle space where, by understanding that there may be some other better things for you to do other than buying banner ads. And so I think that was kind of the beginning of my downfall in the corporate space from that perspective. And then I started my own business. And through my own business, I wanted to build an agency at the very beginning. I hired a couple of folks, and then I realized that wasn't for me. Then I scaled it back after a few years to just me. So I am a solopreneur at this time. I do hire out some stuff. But generally speaking, I do everything myself. All of the work is done by me. Unless there is a need to bring in a partner. So I don't subcontract, but I will bring in partners to take on their piece of the work, that kind of stuff. And so throughout this whole period of time, my business has gone through a number of transitions. And so where I am right now is I'm officially a digital marketing strategist. So I'll put together strategies for companies to achieve certain things. So, for example, if they want to grow or hire or position themselves in the marketplace or be more visible, get more leads, sales, whatever it is. And I'll use all of the tools that are available in the digital marketing tool set to get them there. So parallel to all of this stuff, there are certain pains that happen when you're starting a business, when you run a business. So, for example, as a solopreneur, you are alone a lot of the time. The other aspects are there's ebbs and flows that happen in any business, and there's different pressures that come at you. So the way that I've always looked at it, and this is something kind of evolved over the years, is that I didn't want to separate myself into two people. I didn't want to be at home earnest and then at work earnest. The way I look at it, you are one person and you should be congruent with your values and with your morals and with everything who you are. Bring all of that to the table all of the time. So anybody that knows me, anybody that I hang out with, they know that I'm exactly the same way as I teach, as when I'm with a client, as when I am when I'm at home. It's the same person. And so with that come different tension. So like you mentioned, for example, are you okay with showing that you're going to be vulnerable? Is that going to detract some people from hiring you as a potential provider of services? And chances are, yeah, it probably will. But then at the same time, if I'm able to exclude some of the people that would not hire me because of that, the ones that do end up working with me are a much better fit. And then to answer your second question, which was more about stress and anxiety. So I've had to deal with a lot of really random things that happened in my life personally and professionally. And I noticed that stress was really starting to get to me. And so in particularly why I got so interested in it now was about a month ago, I was driving up to speak at a conference and I thought I was getting a heart attack in a car. And so as I was driving, I noticed a pain in my left arm, tightness in my chest, shortness of breath, and all the rest of it. And immediately, you know, your brain goes back into thinking, you know, this could be a heart attack. So I was actually looking for a ditch that I was going to swerve into if I started getting a heart attack. And long story short, I went, I delivered the talk. It went well. I came back, made an appointment with my doctor, and did all sorts of tests, everything from EKG, blood tests, went to go see an optometrist even to see if it was vision related, all of that kind of stuff. And his suspicions were it was probably a form of a panic attack, which has very similar symptoms to a heart attack. And the crazy thing is I didn't even feel that stressed out. And so that kind of got me really investigating in this space to a much more deeper level. Last year, I wrote an article for Paul Jarvis's Creative Class blog at one point in time about the dark side of entrepreneurship and some of the things that we face as creatives, as creative entrepreneurs. And you know, there's some stress and anxiety and how to get over it. This time, I'm diving a lot deeper in this three-part series about, okay, what is it? What are the symptoms? What actually happens, what are the causes, and then what are some of the solutions? And so I don't know if that answers your question, but that's like a long-winded answer.
Well, you could tell you're in marketing because you can probably talk about this all day, but and that's part of the fun. If you have people on your podcast that answer yes or no, then it just becomes a very short podcast.
Yes.
It's a great illustration of what happens as an entrepreneur. Like you have to be everything. You have to be Superman. You have to be the janitor. You have to be. And I mean, I've been in this role, give or take, for almost the same time. And, I totally get it. And, a lot of times there's only so many hours in a day and you're, you know, expected to do so much and the ebbs and flows. It is kind of taxing. I think, one, you have to be the right kind of person, but also even if you're the right kind of person, it's not always like I always tell some of my friends that work in the government, it's not always about puppy dogs and unicorns. You know, like you don't get sick days. You don't get, like if you don't feel good, it's not like, you know what, I'm just going to call him sick. Cause well, you can call him sick, but
yeah.
Well, you don't get paid. So it's a different, again, and there's also a lot of great things about being an entrepreneur for the most part. You can set your schedule. You can, you know, there's, you have a lot more flexibility, and depending on how successful you are, you can be a lot pickier with your work. So it's a bit of both. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the most important things that I've learned throughout my life, I guess I'm going to combine business and personal here, is that it's not about money. Where success and where your real measure of everything is time. And so what happens is that you essentially work, or you have clients or whatever else, in order to have time so that you can do the things that you want to do. So you essentially are working to buy time. So for example, if you want to go fishing, you have to work in order to make enough money to put gas in your car to go somewhere and fish. And so that might not be the best example. But when it comes to my business in particular, what I was really grateful for is the ability to – my mom in 2012 was diagnosed with lung cancer. And she lived for only 8 months after that. And that was a really hard period of time that changed a lot of my views on things. But thankfully, thanks to having my own business at the time that I did have it, I will have done enough work by that point in time that I was able to take 6 months off and spend all of that time with my family, which was worth to me much more than anything that money could buy.
No, and for sure, I mean, you can't replace, especially stuff like that. I mean, it's not an easy time, but you're very thankful, I'm sure, after that you got to spend that time.
Well, I was very thankful for it before, during, and after, you know, and that's something that I think is a measure of success that, you know, we don't often hear about in entrepreneurial and business circles. You know, everybody looks at growth, revenue, profits, and all the rest of it. The way that I've built my business over the years was more around lifestyle. The ability to have control of my time, to do good work for good people and good companies, but then also to have the ability to say, for example, take a few days off and spend now with my daughter. Take a few light days to I can spend. So for example, right now our dog just had surgery on her knee, so she's going to be in recovery. So I do physio with her every day, 3 times a day for the next 2 months, essentially. So I've lightened up my load so I can do these other things that life brings to the table. And so that's what I think is even more important as a measure of success, is to have a sense of control over your destiny, essentially, rather than just kind of like going with the flow into whatever.
It's funny how as you get older, your definition of success really changes. I remember being young, it's like money, you know, like money, power, respect, whatever, like, is, you know, that's what you wanted. Now it's like, well, I mean, I think you need a little bit of money to, unfortunately, money makes the world go round. The power I could care less about. I just want to get stuff done. And I mean, the respect is nice, but to me, it's right. It goes back to what you're saying, the lifestyle. For me, health is a huge thing.
It is. It's, you only get one run at this. You know, if you wait until you're 50 or 60 to do the things that you want to do or to get healthy, it's probably going to be too late.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of people, and my grandfather, it was a perfect, example of this, where he worked all his life, and I think it was like less than 6 months after he retired, he died of cancer.
Yeah.
So people, and I think our generation is a little better than back in the day, I should say. Like, I think now we're trying to, enjoy ourselves a little more than just, oh, when I retire and, you know, at 64 years old, maybe I'll start my life. So whereas now we have, okay, yeah, obviously you can't just mortgage the future to go, you know, on a trip every weekend. But I think there is a little bit more of lifestyle, emphasis on lifestyle, emphasis on wellness. And everyone defines wellness differently. But
yes,
I still think at least it's part of the equation now, as opposed to like, well, you got to work that 10 more hours to make another, you know, a couple bucks at the end of the day.
And it depends on what you prioritize as a success too, right? I mean, if you get sucked into the corporate environment, which is, I think, totally fine for a lot of people if that's the way what they want to pursue, but that's the mentality, right? So it's like you go there, you work hard, you work extra hard, and you work more hard, and then you're going to rise up eventually to work harder and make more money, and then eventually, you know, maybe have some time with your family, kind of thing. So it just kind of depends. And I'll tell you, I'll also admit to this too. When I was younger, about, I think it was 26 or 27 or so, part of the reason why I ended up why I was in that sales environment. So I got recruited to go in there, and I was making really good money. So I had two cars, two motorcycles. We just bought a house. We're going on this like month long backpacking trip through Costa Rica and all that kind of stuff. And all that stuff was great. But what I found out at the very end is that that wasn't what made me happy. And so, you know, over the years, I've really shed a lot of that kind of thinking as time went along. Because, you know, I sold, here's a very illustrative example. So I drove a BMW because I thought that was a good representation of kind of like who I am and all this kind of stuff. And then I ended up selling it and bought a Honda Fit, a used Honda Fit, in order to put our dog and a baby. And it was the best decision ever. You know, it's just interesting things, how much we attach value to certain things that at the end of the day are just things.
Yeah, I mean, I can echo that. A couple of years ago, I used to drive a nice Porsche Cayenne SUV, and it was the same thing. Part of it was just the ego, like, "Hey, I work hard, I can do this." And it's like, yeah, well, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't get you there much faster, or if it does, you can get a speeding ticket. So it doesn't really help. And again, it goes back to I would rather just spend, you know, more time at home and cook more and do different things than have that.
Yeah, and I think having the realization of even getting to that point is something that I think a lot of people kind of evolve through as they see different things, read different ideas, or collect different ideas from their friends and conferences and all the rest of that kind of stuff. And I think some people also don't, and you know, they kind of get stuck to a certain level, and that's where they get sucked into, and they continue down that road, and you know, and that's okay too. I think everybody just has to find their own path that's true to them.
What do you think startups can lead to a wellness frame of mind?
Can startups lead to a wellness frame of mind? I would say yes. So to give you a concrete example, so a couple of years ago, and even right now, I'm working with a friend of mine. He had this idea that he wanted to get off the ground, so I helped him some marketing, and that kind of fell through. But now he's starting this other idea that basically connects physicians to patients, and in order to get them on a path of wellness. So that's diet, exercise, and some of these other things. Because what he was really passionate about was in regards to, you know, there's giant problems with obesity, diabetes, and a number of others, weight-related and unwellness-related issues and health problems that can be solved very simply. And so the issue was that he came across was that, you know, doctor, physicians and patients and us normal people weren't really communicating, and that there was no responsibility. There was no accountability back and forth. So we worked on an app together that is now working to solve that problem. And he's launched, like, there's been interest with physicians and pediatricians pretty much all over the world in his own circles, because he works in those types of circles, to get this app rolled up across different countries and different places. So absolutely, there are startups that are helping people move and do stuff, which is fantastic. A recent example, Pokemon Go.
Yeah, no, we've made a lot of fun of it, but again, it gets people out and doing
stuff. Yeah. It gets people out doing stuff. I mean, granted, they're all looking down. I'm guessing it's probably going to have some kind of a impact on their spine and stuff. Yeah. But they're out doing stuff rather than sitting at home, and I think that's fantastic.
I meant more the startup lifestyle, where you're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. You probably eat takeout food. You're over-caffeinated. You know, that stuff. Like, you're always on the go, traveling. I'm sure, like, when you travel, I'm sure you've traveled, it's the worst. Like, that's a lifestyle killer right there.
You know,
like,
well, yeah, you know, it is. And again, you have to kind of figure out what you want. So one of my big things that I wanted to do when I was younger was to travel a lot for work. And I did manage to do that. I actually recently came back from a trip to Illinois when I spoke at an economic development conference. And I almost died in a tornado on the way to the conference. And it's not a joke. It was a surreal experience. So we landed in Chicago, and the flight to the place where I was supposed to go to got canceled, and I ended up renting a car with two complete strangers at the airport, and then we drove for 3 hours to get to this place Meanwhile, we had this. It was an insane storm. We didn't have the radio on. Turned out by the point that we had to pull over because there was a bunch of other people under overpasses and stuff. Turns out that we're about 1 or 2 minutes in front of us was a tornado that ripped through a town, flipped over a gas station, and did a whole bunch of other damage. If we would have kept going, could have basically died.
Yeah.
And you know, you take that into stock, and you're like, well, is that really worth it?
Is it worth speaking at this conference?
It was, you know, it was a great conference. I had a chance to meet some really good people, and I'm happy that I came back now. But that's one of the things, right? It's like, was this a thing that really kind of brought some more clarity around my work? Or so, yes. And again, when it comes to lifestyle, if you're traveling for work, most of the time you're alone. Are you going to exercise, or are you going to go eat out? Are you going to do you even have time due to jet lag to get up in the morning and do stretches and yoga or whatever else? And then going to stay true to your wellness routine when you're away. It's very easy to be surrounded by temptation when things are not in your control. So you can't prepare your meals, so you have to go out. What kind of decision are you going to make? So all of that stuff comes into effect with this.
One more question. The bridge between our two subjects today, social media or digital marketing and wellness.
Sure.
Do you find social media, does it help wellness or does it hinder wellness?
That's an interesting question. So I think it depends on the spin that you put on it. So wellness is a very wide-ranging topic. I recently gave a talk on digital marketing trends in which I wanted to sneak in something at the very end. And so I read a lot of research from different psychology journals and medical journals, and as well as a number of other sources, where you can draw a clear and logical line in the way that apps, social media networks, and software is essentially designed in order to keep you hooked to it. Most people listening to this, I'm assuming, will have some kind of a social media network or an app on their phone. And how often are they checking it? There's actually new studies that have been coming out now since we've become so addicted to our phones that clearly show a compulsion loop being created through notifications that show an addictive behavior. So what happens is due to the way that the apps are designed, to kind of cut a long story short, is that when there's certain rewards such as new content or a new notification, your brain does a very similar thing as it does when it gets hit by cocaine or nicotine. So it releases dopamine and releases those types of hormones, which make you feel happy. And in turn, that reinforces the behavior of you checking that app again. There's also new classifications for high-frequency phone users, so people that are checking apps 60 or more times a day, sometimes without no notification on their phone, so just as a habit. And so those are all, I would say, negative types of habits that are affecting our wellness in a negative way. On the flip side to that, if you look at something like Fitbit, it promotes wellness. It promotes you to walk. You can actually have some kind of a scoreboard where you can compete with your friends if you want to. So I use a meditation timer called Insight Timer that is not necessarily social media related, but you can plug into an online community of meditators and kind of, you know, when you're meditating, there's a map of people that are meditating with you across the world. So it's kind of an interesting idea. Pokemon Go is kind of an interesting idea. You can take social media and twist it into something that is, I'm going to look and find people in my area to go on a run with. So it all depends on what you choose to do with that tool is the way that I would put it. Social media can be powerful, but it can also be a death spiral of doom.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. There's been a lot of talk recently about you know, narcissism on Facebook, and people only post stuff on Facebook to make themselves look better, and they're not.
Yes.
I saw this kind of post recently about it's not a workout until you post it on Facebook.
It's true, you know, and I've been guilty of that too.
I did
before we had our baby, I used to go to the gym at one point in time, and so I was doing powerlifting, right? And I would like take a photo of my deadlifts and benches and squats and all that kind of stuff because I wanted to share it. But then, you know, that kind of creates an interesting thing too, because if you share those types of things, to somebody who might be in transit and maybe doesn't have the time or maybe feels guilty about not going out to the gym. It creates this sort of like a very different spin depending on that one particular person, where they might feel guilty about not going out and therefore not going out to exercise. And therefore it might affect their wellness negatively, or it might empower somebody to say that I feel inspired by this. I should also go and lift some weights or go for a run or whatever else. So it's a very interesting individual, very highly individual experience that we're all going through. And again, it really depends on, and I think this is what it comes down to. It comes down to control. Is the app or the software or social media controlling you, or are you controlling it?
I think that's a great point. I've actually turned off all the notifications that I can on all my apps or whatever. So, it goes back to I check when I want to check as opposed to getting that dopamine hit like a crack cocaine addict.
I'm going to throw you a curveball here. I know if we go on your Twitter, and I'll link all your socials after, but your background photo is a bunch of books.
Right.
And to get into the wellness, and I actually noticed that you were talking about 10% Happier from Dan Harris, which is it's a book I listened to probably about 6 months ago, and it was incredible. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, especially the way that he talks about like the I don't know if you're there yet, but he, and I'm not going to give the punchline away.
Well, I finished the book now.
So okay, good. Okay, so I really enjoyed when he's doing that silent retreat, kind of the play by play in his head.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. It's just that chapter alone is definitely worth the book. And the thing I like about him is that he makes meditation accessible. Like he's not like he actually tries to break it down from like this woo stuff to more like, okay, how can we use this stuff? But
you know,
to get a question, what would be your top three books that you've read recently that would help in the wellness sphere?
It's a tough question. I read a lot. So
I know that's why I'm asking you.
Is your is this a clean podcast?
It's as clean as you want it to be.
Okay, so a couple of things. So I read 10% Happier, and I really enjoyed it. It's by Dan Harris, and like you mentioned, it's a really good insight into sort of a skeptic's journey into meditation is the way that I would describe it.
Yeah, very well.
Because he's not really into meditation at the beginning, and eventually kind of figures it out. Even the fact that he's going so there's something called a meta meditation, which is which is where you wish happiness and joy to people that you know, and that feels very woo. So 10% Happier is a really good one. The other book that I recently picked up that I'm really excited about reading is called Fuck It, The Ultimate Spiritual Way. It's by a gentleman called John C. Parkin, who, funny enough, at one point in time used to work in a marketing agency with his wife. Then they both quit and left to live in Italy and started a retreat. So they lived in a van, went there, started a retreat, raised some money. And so now he holds these fuck it retreats. He's written, I think, 3 or 4 different books now about this. And it's basically an even more simple way to look at Eastern philosophy, because in his bio, he says he's studied Eastern spiritual practices for 20 years. And then he came across this, you know, what this really summarizes in this powerful statement of fuck it. And so I can't wait to read that book.
Okay. Any other ones that you can recommend for folks?
So there's something very specific, and I actually just went into my library here to see if I can find it. There's a couple of really, really good ones that I really enjoyed.
While you look for that, I'll give you one suggestion that I really enjoyed, especially with your kind of scientific mind. It's called Spark by Dr. John C. Ratty. I don't know if you read that one.
I don't think I have.
It really changed the way and the reason why I exercise. It talks about exercise and its effects on the brain, and it's
okay.
Very, very scientific, but also very practical. So,
okay, I'm gonna look into that because I'm now on this kind of a kick right now when it comes to health and wellness. Okay, so I found the book, and this one was actually written by Esther Gokhale. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I can send you the link. And basically, it is a woman who's an executive, and she was noticing she was having issues with her back. and she went to chiropractors and all this other kind of stuff. And then on one of her trips to, I think she went to somewhere in Africa, she noticed that there's all these indigenous people that don't have any issues with their back, and yet they're carrying all sorts of heavy loads. And the book is called 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back. And she has by now worked with some of the top Fortune 500 people. She works with Sergey from Google and a bunch of other different really high-end CEOs and all that kind of stuff to walk them through this process of relieving pain in their back and in their neck, because of we're always hunched over a computer. So that's a very highly practical book awesome. From that perspective.
I'll have to look that one up.
And I'll mention just one more, and this is kind of more going back into the whole meditation space. So I've been interested in Eastern philosophy for a long time, and I've been participant in Soto Zen for about 10 years or so, on and off. And so I do meditate, and I kind of fall off the wagon, I get back on it, and you know, I meditate for a while. And so there was a there's a couple of really good books that I really liked. One of them was called Zen Wrapped in Karma, Dipped in Chocolate by Brad Warner, which is kind of an unorthodox look at Zen and Zen philosophy. So he's actually somebody that plays in a punk band, a hardcore punk band.
Okay.
And then got into Zen, and he kind of talks about his journey, so his views about Zen and these different aspects of meditation and enlightenment and all the rest of it. So it was kind of like a good entertaining book. And the only other one that I would look at in that space was the one book that actually got me started down this journey many, many years ago. It's called The Living Tao. It's not the most accurate translation of Tao, but it's the one that spoke to me the best. I just happened to pick it up at the right time. And it's by Stephen F. Kaufman. It was a good read at the right time for me. So that might be something that somebody might find helpful.
That's great. Again, I love chatting with like-minded folks that we might have slightly different interests in wellness, meditation, whatever, but it's nice to, because we all, I mean, there's so many books out there now, which is good and bad because there's only so much time to read them. One more question before we sign off. I know you're a busy guy. I don't want to take up too much of your time.
No worries.
What does wellness mean to you?
That's a tough question. You know, what does wellness mean to me? I would like to say that at the end of my life, I can say it was a life well lived. And that would be wellness to me. So to be healthy enough to chase after my kid, to not be all crippled up by old age and arthritis and just weakness when I'm in my 60s or 70s, so I can't go out and hang out and do stuff, to be free of anxiety, stress, and depression as much as possible, to have the sort of like the mental resiliency to those types of things, and to be healthy, I guess. That's the one thing that we have that – you can't really pay for. You can't pay somebody to run for you. You can't pay somebody to replace your heart if it gets weak over the years. So that's kind of the way that I would put it, is to have a life well lived.
I like it. I like it. Ernest, thank you so much. This has been great. We can probably continue this for another half hour, another couple hours. It's great to get the different points of view, but a nice little conversation going. So thank you so much. And for the folks at home, be well. This will be another great episode of Wellness Wednesdays. And stay tuned for all this great stuff.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me.